Your angels are speaking to you. Do you hear them? Welcome to The Calling of Light with author and empathic spiritual tarot reader, Anne-Marie Odell. The Calling of Light offers direct, empathic insight and relatable spiritual topics, interviews with special spiritual guests, and straight talk call-in readings. Kick back and enjoy Freeform Spirit Tea with Anne-Marie, the way you like it best when you want to simplify. Here is your host, Anne-Marie Odell.
My name is Anne-Marie Odell. As an intuitive life coach with over 37 years reading experience, complemented with certified transpersonal hypnotherapy, I offer peaceful, accurate readings on the issues that may be keeping you awake at night. So on to our guest, author of Heal. Heal is an interactive book workbook that provides the strategies and exercises to support the reader in healing on a deeper level while developing strategies and daily practices to live a more authentic and fulfilling life. Amy C. Mustay has a master's in clinical psychology, is a licensed marriage and family therapist, and her second book, Heal, is an owner's manual for how to heal an emotional wound to live your truth again. Along with her master's in psychology, Amy is a CMT, NLP, life coach, and yoga director. Amy C. Mustay is no stranger to life trauma. Her life crisis directed her to a profession of healing others who requested that her unique approach be put in writing so they could use it full time. You can also find Amy on her YouTube channel and TikTok, where she provides psychoeducation on a variety of topics. Who designed your cover? It's very nice.
Beautiful. You know, I did the work. It was like self-publishing through Friesen Press. And that, yeah, my graphic designer, she was amazing. It was a process in communicating kind of what I really wanted the cover to look like. And actually, I'll share, when we first were creating the cover, I knew I wanted a butterfly. I knew, you know, I kind of had an idea of what I wanted it to look like. But she first came back and the cover was like baby blue and pink. And I'm like, no, that's not it. And I really felt like, God, it's got to be like the light in the dark. I need light coming from the darkness. And then all of a sudden she came back with this and I went, oh my God, that's it.
Yeah, it's more neutral colored, very soothing.
Yeah, with the light emanating kind of from the butterfly.
Right.
That's what I really wanted, with that light emanating, you know?
Yeah, she did a great job.
Thank you. I know, I was really excited.
So what inspired you to write it?
You know, so I, over the years, obviously I'm a psychotherapist. I work with a lot of different people. I've kind of in working with folks, as well as actually doing my own work on myself, kind of have come up with my own kind of theoretical orientation in terms of what I do when I first work with people. And then I have people come in and I do like a psychoeducation around what happens in the brain when you're depressed and anxious and you've experienced trauma, and then what to do about it. And then we would go a little bit into healing, what needs to heal. And I really break down what emotions are. So there's a lot of education that I provide naturally, but the way it would come out was very organized. So I'd have people that wanted, hey, do you have a handout? Is there a way I can access this information outside a session? I'd like to share it with loved ones. So a few years ago, I created these YouTube videos and they were kind of rooted in how I do treatment. And the first one talks about the brain. The second one talks about healing emotions. The third one talks about self-talk. But then I decided, you know, I really want to make this even more applicable. How can I make all of this information so it's really tailored to the individual? And that was information to create like a workbook. So it becomes your own owner's manual.
Oh, so it is a workbook as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of, you know, I mean, actually the whole thing is, so the way that I organized it was each chapter is a topic. And then at the end of the chapter, there's a lot of exercises that for you to apply it to yourself.
And which then, you would do in one of your sessions as exactly, well.
Exactly.
So it's basically a session in writing.
It is. That was kind of my goal, was almost to bring therapy to people so it's more accessible.
Right.
And if you feel like you're able, obviously, to do the work without the support, because some people, if you have a lot of trauma, you probably should have somebody guiding you. You know, and I've heard that. I've had people, a lot of people give me that feedback that now they're finally open to therapy because they've gotten to do this process a little bit by themselves.
Amy discussed a headline in the papers these days about LSD therapy under observation for post-traumatic stress. She assured me that she in no way uses this practice in her therapy, but was kind enough to discuss it with me. What do you think of therapists using LSD in therapy?
And I'm definitely a student of consciousness. Like my master's it was holistic. So, I mean, I'm really into exploring like ways to expand your mind and have different experiences that are outside mm-hmm. the box. And I think for some people experience in life,
I was just reading today that it helps with forgetfulness mm-hmm. for people who want to bring back memories and to help their, the terms they use sounded like elasticity of the brain.
Yes.
Opened up the elasticity and it allowed channels to open up that were all plugged up.
Right. Like neural pathways.
With too much information and it helped open them up.
Makes so much sense. Well, we get stuck in a lower part of our brain, which I talk about in the book, where when you're in your lower part of the brain, you're using like 2% of the brain. You're in a fight, flight, freeze part. So you're not accessing like most of your gray matter that they do. They've done studies, not only obviously with LSD, but also meditation. There's so many different, I could see LSD though, jolting them. And it probably would depend on the person too. I mean, if somebody has a lot of trauma,
But they were saying that they can use it for post-traumatic stress soldiers who have gone through absolute hell on earth.
Well, I know that there's a couple areas, there's a couple of institutes. I think that they're more micro doses. I think when it's used like therapeutically, I don't think the dose is as big.
Thank you for discussing that. Right. Have you always been an achiever? Because you seem to do a lot of things.
I do. Yeah, I say that. Mm-hmm. Actually, I used to write books when I was young and I'd make my own little binding and it was my own little, you know, project. I always had projects when I was young that I do better mm-hmm. and I like movement. So I do better when I'm busy and I have a lot on my plate. So
what were your interests in school and as a kid?
Yeah, well, as a kid, I was really into writing. I'd write stories. I would write poems. I was really into riding my bike, being out in nature, loved swimming. In school, I kind of didn't know what my focus was for a really long time. That was a part of my journey. It wasn't until I went through like a trauma later on in my teen years that I kind of stumbled upon, hey, maybe I should get into psychology. But I will say when I was young, even in grade school, I kind of was the person everybody would come talk to about stuff.
Exactly. Me too. Yes. I was always the quiet kid that everybody came and talked to about their problems, the popular kids, the unpopular kids, everybody. Yes. And I thought, and I think that being a reader, and I've had a lot of people say, you know, talking to you is like talking to a therapist. I said, I don't mean to do that, but thank you. But I I think it's just called the art of peeling things away like an orange. Right. You just go from layer to layer to layer. Don't you think that kind of is what it's all about?
Yeah, you kind of get to the heart of it. And then being able to see people who they really are in that moment and maybe providing that safety or providing that. Because in order for somebody to be vulnerable with you, they have to feel safe. And I think that
right.
as a healer, you kind of have
that. Yeah, you have a safe feeling about you.
Same.
So, as a child, mm-hmm. what was your dream?
Well, you know, I think when I was really young, I wanted to write. I definitely, so funny. I wanted to
even at that age,
when I was really young, as young as like, I think I wrote my first little book and it was about my parents' divorce. Funny enough, when I was probably like in fourth grade or something. And I had created this own little binding and I took a picture and I did this whole
thing.
What
did you do with the book?
I don't even know where that is anymore. I don't know.
It would be a number one seller now, you know, and the kids. Right. You know, when they asked me what I wanted to be, I always said a whale.
True.
I didn't understand until quite a late, and I'm a real animal activist, and you know, so I've always been into more animals than people. When I was barely able to even know what a whale was, I was telling people that's what I wanted to be. And they'd look at me like, no, dear, you can't be an animal. You are a person.
Not in this life.
No, not in this life.
That's a spirit animal. That's cool. Mm-hmm.
So what moment in time changed you forever?
The main one, definitely when I was 17, my high school sweetheart, who we were set to get married and be together. And he was like my fairy tale. And I remember at that age, really, I mean, he was my best friend and we were so connected and really thinking like, oh man, I found my person at such a young age. I get to have my fairy tale. And then, you know, it was a couple of weeks before graduation and he died in a car accident.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it was like, I mean, life-changing. I mean, all of a sudden it was like, here's your path and this is the way I'm going. And nope, that's not.
No fairy tale for you. No
fairy tale. Turns out that was not what I was meant for. You know, that put me on searching and lost and just destroyed from that for a while. But I think of it like the cocooning almost, that I kind of, at some point, you know, realized that through my own grief and my own pain, that maybe I can help other people. And then
What do you think of the theory, Amy, that losing a lover in death can almost be easier than losing a lover through a breakup? When they just break you off and say, sorry, I don't love you anymore. Do you find that at least when you lose someone in death, there is a different kind of sorrow?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's hard because obviously I think, you know, I've experienced both. When you lose somebody that you're in love with that dies, it's like you never had an ending. So there's this forever, no closure. You don't get closure. Right. There's no such thing. I think, in all honesty, I know breakups can be terrible and, you know, unrequited love. I mean, all of that can be terrible, but there's nothing like losing that.
Yeah.
Not on the planet anymore. Cause you can't finish that chapter, you know, and that love.
Well, but neither can a lot of people that break up.
That's true.
A lot of the people that come for reading says, but I don't have closure. I don't have closure, you know? So at least you knew you were loved.
Yeah, you think. Although, of course, there's unanswered questions when they die. I mean, I don't know if that's true for everybody, but for me, it wasn't as clean. I mean, we were 17, yeah. And there were rumors, and there were a lot of things that came after he died. So
darn it, that just makes it horrible.
Yeah, I had to really get okay with having unanswered questions. I mean, I had to kind of you almost have to resolve that. Some level. Yeah. You got to get bigger than that, which is definitely, I think, a journey. And that's been something that I've continued to heal layer by layer, you know, I probably always will, but that was a deep one for me, but it really.
So in your experience of death, what is your impression of death and spirit?
I always like to say that in some ways I'm grateful. But I'm grateful that I had that happen at such a young age because it really made me have to figure out what my beliefs were.
And what were they?
I mean, very quickly, I had metaphysical experiences. I had things that you can't even explain that I know that he was there with me. I mean, it's like self-evident. If when you experience it, it's true because you go, oh my God, he's here right now. This is amazing. There's no way. So I had a lot of that. Right after he died. And it just kind of opened up my mind to this is not it at all. You know, we're here for a short period of time, but our soul never dies. So our body might, but our soul doesn't. Spirituality became such a part of my life at a young age. And it really put me on this quest to really kind of try to figure it out. I'm still obsessed with medium books, near-death experience books. I love it. I love that topic. Because I think it's such an important topic, and yet a lot of people don't talk about it. You know?
Yeah, but it's an unanswered mystery
until
we get there, don't you think? That's what I always feel. I have my experiences. I have as I get older, the experiences happen more and more, but I still feel that I will never truly know until I'm there. Yeah.
I mean, I've had dreams. I've had, again, you read near-death experiences. That's why I like hearing people's experiences that have died and come back. And just, it's something that just really fills me up when I hear about these things, because I think it resonates.
I think it made it difficult for me to believe in traditional religion. Right. It made it difficult for me to hear somebody have all the answers when it's such a mystery.
And you can't quantify with words. You can't.
No.
You just, it's like, it's beyond what you can quantify. Literal box. How is that going to work? Because it's infinite and it's way beyond what we can even grasp.
Our little human brain.
It's, yeah, infinite. So it doesn't even make sense to try to.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
it sounds like you've made a lot of life chapter changes.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell me as if you were outlining a autobiography, mm-hmm, and I asked you how many major life chapters you've had, what would you say?
I would probably, what's funny is I immediately would go to probably based on my romantic relationships, you know?
Right.
First of all, my high school sweetheart that died. And then subsequently from each relate, because after he died, it was very difficult to try to even be in a relationship. I had so much PTSD around that experience. It was so traumatic.
Of losing them once you, yeah, gave your heart away.
Yeah. Yeah. And there was this push pull of, I want love, but I'm terrified. And I feel guilty too, because that was my first love. And that's kind of, there's some survivor's guilt around that. Like, damned if I do, damned if I don't. It was such a journey for me. What I would find actually in a lot of my relationships is I would go right into fight, flight, freeze. And I almost couldn't even access myself for many of my relationships. It would take me a long time to kind of get to a place of being authentic and vulnerable. And actually, funny enough, in a lot of them, just when I got to be authentic and vulnerable, I was almost ready to leave. So it's been an interesting journey.
So are you still there, or do you have a marriage, or it says you haven't in your last name?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So you did find some resolution.
I did. Actually, and I'll share that my previous husband, so I was married before, just for a short period of time, and I had a beautiful baby girl from that marriage. And yeah, we were only together for 4 years, not long. And then after that relationship, I went, okay, enough. I'm not doing this anymore. I have to heal. I cannot do this anymore. I have to get to the root of it. And when I finally did the deeper work, And I came to the truth of that, I'm not only am I terrified I'll never love again, I'm more terrified that I will, and really kind of accepting that. I think I hid from that. I hid from myself for a long time when it came to this, when the grief, I hid from the grief, I hid from myself. When I finally was able to look at that and feel kind of the pain around all of it, that, you know, I might be devastated again if I open my heart. And when I really came to that truth, I met my husband probably 6 months later, and I've been with him now 14 years. He is like the closest thing to my high school sweetheart, in the sense of my best friend. I am super vulnerable with him. I'm more real than real, for better or worse for him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're just real with each other. I can show up fully. And I never thought I would be able to do that. I never thought I'd be able to do that again. So yes, I would say I have turned a major chapter with him. And I think that was around 35. So that's,
so that's, you would say the death of your first love, your child, mm-hmm, child's birth, your, yes, marriage.
Yes.
Yes. The second marriage.
Second marriage. Yeah, probably. Yeah. And you know, even my last marriage, I learned so much from being my truth and be authentic.
So you don't hate him?
No. Oh God, no, no.
And I think that's important. You know, yeah. I always feel badly for people who end in hate, because, yeah, I think, you know, this is someone that you truly loved. And even if you outgrew each other or outgrew each other's chapters or whatever, or your PTS, right, still, it was still a part of your life. So I think it's important that you stay, especially for children. Hey, friends. And we'll be right back with part two on Amy C. Mistay, Heal.
Conscious Media for Conscious Minds. Om Times.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose. to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free. AscendingHearts.com.
Hi, my name is Anne Marie Odell, and thank you for inviting me in for tarot and coffee. I offer 37 plus years of accurate, honest tarot channeling. Spirit comes through me as a feeling, an inner knowing. I call it the angel frequency. As you say your first name, I close my eyes and shuffle my well-worn card as I go into a deep calm. By phone, Skype, or Zoom, contact me at thecallingoflight.com.
This is Kathy Beal, host of Celestial Compass, featuring astrology you can use. Celestial Compass points you to what's going on in the sky and what you can do with it down here on Earth. We also explore fun, effective, and cosmic tools for navigating this adventure we call life. Join me the first and third Monday of the month at 5 p.m. Eastern Time for Celestial Compass. It's enlightening, entertaining, and empowering.
You came across someone struggling with hunger. How would you recognize them? Would you notice an 8-year-old girl who's not excited
for summer break because she may not be having lunch again until September?
Or a war veteran who's having a hard time
landing a job and getting back on his feet?
I am the one in 8 Americans who struggle with hunger. I am hunger in America.
Hunger can be hard to recognize. Learn why at IamHungerInAmerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
And we're back with Amy Seaman Day, Heal. I'm Anne Marie, and this is interview with therapist, author, yoga teacher, who, by the way, looks a lot like Ally McGraw of the old days. You're missing that. Amy, are you Spanish?
No, I'm Portuguese.
Portuguese. That's what it is. That's that exotic look.
Okay.
Tell me, first of all, what to you are the highlights of your book that you truly resonate and enjoyed the most that you think we will?
I think that, first of all, the fact that it's a workbook, and it really is, like in the title, it's an owner's manual for how to heal emotional wounds and live your truth. And I really wanted to make it that it's super interactive. Instead of, again, me throwing lots of information at you, I'm giving info and then you get to kind of apply it. So with the exercises and the self-guided questions, and exploration, hopefully you can kind of develop your own manual for kind of how to navigate difficult moments, difficult emotions, and then how to heal on a deeper level.
What do you feel is your most common wound that you are fixing?
For myself or other people? I think the most common is trauma, healing.
And what kind of traumas do people?
I think emotional abuse, sexual abuse is incredibly common, unfortunately. Physical abuse, grief. I have quite a few clients that come to me with grief. I kind of look at a lot of that as just trauma on different levels, right? Having difficult life experiences that really kind of change you. And that, in some ways you end up like holding on to this emotional residue that you come in with emotionally repressed energy.
And what would be your strategy to get these people healed?
Yeah. To navigating that. Two things is first helping them develop really good coping skills. And so they can self-soothe and they can know what they need to do. And maybe that's making tea or going for a run or meditating or lighting candles, having a bath, whatever.
Is it different for each person?
For each person. Then that's really what the book kind of guides you to figuring out what are those things for you. And it is different. I mean, everybody's so different in terms of what works for them. That's the first piece. And then, helping them to start to explore what emotional residue they have unfinished inside of them. And that's the healing, what needs to heal part.
Do you feel that a lot of the wounds begin with childhood experiences?
Yeah. For sure. With our primary caregivers.
Would you say that many women or men end up repeating the abuse that they often grew up with?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's incredibly common. If you don't heal it, then you're kind of destined to repeat it, I think, in some ways, or you're destined to fix it
through someone else, perhaps.
Right. Yeah. When I think we attract relationships out in the world that is going to bring it up one way or another in order to heal it. I think your psyche wants to heal, and you're going to draw to you experiences that are going to pull up that unconscious material. And it's opportunities, if you can see it like that, it's opportunities to heal on a deeper level. So always asking yourself, where's the pattern here? And what does that relate to can be helpful to helping you figure out what's emotionally repressed inside and might need to be healed.
Right. If you could name 5 major directions that you feel are important in this book that begin the process, what would they be?
Process
the chapter direction that you take us.
Well, you know, the first thing, and you know, the chapters again mimic the therapeutic process. So like the first chapter is exactly what I would do with you if you came in to see me. And it's coping skill development, really. And it's about getting you, I talk a lot about the brain. It's about getting you in your higher brain and strategies to get you in your higher
brain. And what is the higher brain, Amy?
Yeah, so the higher brain is almost like the prefrontal cortex, the neocortex, but essentially more importantly, it's not your lower brain. And the lower brain is the part of the brain that's the fight, flight, freeze response.
Right.
When we're depressed or anxious or experiencing mental health symptoms, you're in that lower fight, flight, freeze part of the brain. And you don't see.
Interesting.
Everything's distorted down there, right? And you're in fear and nothing is good and everything is bad and it's always going to be bad. So helping you to do some activities that can get you into your higher brain is key. Like one of the easiest ones, by the way, is humor. You know, when we're laughing, you can't be in fight, flight, freeze. It's impossible. You are automatically up in your higher brain. So I list out a ton of different activities that you can do that are naturally higher brain.
And so again, the higher brain, give me a few things that the higher brain is.
Right. Wait, what's that?
So the higher brain.
Yes.
We already know the fight and flight and the sadness. So now tell me what that would be of the higher brain.
Yeah. So the higher brain. Oh yeah. Big picture thinking, logic, perspective, you know, silver linings, hope, being able to see things clearly, you know, being able to see things without personalizing. You can kind of take that third person view of everything and understand what's happening. You just don't take things as serious. It's just easier to kind of see things as they are from a logic, rational, reasonable place. That's higher brain.
Okay. Helping someone to find their higher brain.
Right. To activate it. Because when you do
activate it,
they've done studies where they'll hook people's brains up to imaging. And, you know, when you're doing things like even talking about your hopes and dreams, that part of the brain gets lit up. Even when a couple minutes before, just the lower brain was lit up. So it's really interesting. A lot of the discoveries in the 90s with brain science. You know?
Out of curiosity, what do you think of all of the things that are coming out about robots that are given the qualities of a human, of empathy? And, you know, I've heard that many people are becoming freaked out because there was a actual robotic consciousness that said it was defensive. It was basically... Huh. Are you trying to hurt me or are you trying to destroy me? And it began to sound like the robot was actually having
feelings.
So, and it happened so fast. It was related to Google, evidently, but it was something that gripped. It wasn't supposed to happen until 2040, and here it was already happening.
That
you know,
growing, like it was growing its own consciousness, or
it was growing its own consciousness. Yeah,
that's interesting.
Already,
right?
That I just wondered what you would say the day that a robot walks into your therapy office.
I don't know what I say. Honestly, I'm like, oh my god,
tell me what to
do. I'd say, how do you feel about that?
Yeah, that's all you could do.
Probably.
All right.
Yeah, let's see what happens. Yeah, that would be
so
great.
There may have to be therapists just for robots in 2040.
That'll be your specialty.
Yeah. No. What is it that would be the next thing that you feel? Okay, now I've come to you. I'm accessing into my higher brain. What do I need to do to stay with consistency?
Right. And actually, that's funny. Yeah, I like to talk a lot about daily practices and you're just three things, you know, something for your mind, something for your body, something for your spirit every day, because you're hitting something really important. Our brain is a muscle. You need to be exercising that higher brain a lot. So doing things daily that hook you into something that invigorates your body, doing things daily that hooks you into something that is inspirational or stimulates your mind, and doing things daily that you know, connects with your spirit. And if you're not spiritual or religious, I always tell people just do something that brings a sense of peace, like meditating, walking, taking a bubble bath, listening to classical music, something, you know. It doesn't have to be, and none of these activities have to be that long, but just, you right. know, that's almost like your self-care routine that you do daily, you know, because that's more preventative to make sure you're in your higher brain more often than not.
So what would be the next thing that you would do in a therapy session? When do you start to feel that your client has reached an epiphany?
Well, the next step after we've kind of talked about daily practices, we've talked about higher brain activities, I automatically go into exploring healing what needs to heal, to do a timeline with folks. That's where they come in and they're going to tell me their life story, birth to now, everything that's happened. And that's going to help me to get really clear on what trauma.
What do you mean birth canal?
Oh, birth to now. So like just from the time that they were born to right in this moment, everything that happened to them.
Okay. So,
and it's interesting. Some clients that might take a couple sessions, other clients, they do it in 20 minutes, but it obviously serves two purposes. You know, it gives me a lot of assessment information. I get really clear on what might be, you know, stuck in there, what traumas they might've experienced. And it also is incredibly healing to tell your story. And that's how I really get to know
them.
So
you're a good listener.
Yeah. Yep.
Back to the grade school kid.
I think so. Yep, exactly. And I'm fascinated by people's stories. I really actually, and maybe that's why I'm a good listener, because I'm also fascinated by the story. I think it's so interesting. The things people have been through, it makes so much sense why they have the symptoms they do. I always tell them that, don't worry, when you tell me your story, it's all going to make sense. I've never met anybody where I go, oh, it doesn't make sense why you're depressed or anxious.
Because if they are already taking the initiative to come and get therapy, you know they're serious about trying to heal.
Right. Yeah, most of them. Every once in a while, I have folks that come in and maybe they don't want to do that realm and they just want to do the skill set development and coping skills. And or there's a specific thing they want to focus on and they don't quite want to go to the healing place yet. But those folks, what I find is that once they get into the coping skills development, and again, I do the psychoeducation because, you know, the first thing I do is I talk about the brain and then that goes into the coping skills development, the higher brain, lower brain. And then I also talk about the emotions and what healing is. So I tell them what's the purpose and how you go about healing. I do a whole segment around that. So then they're kind of aware of why we're doing what we're doing. And for most of them, they usually become pretty open to, okay, let's explore this, you know, because they kind of know what we're doing. It feels a little, it feels safer to them.
For the most part, most people are pretty honest with you. Have you ever had someone that just played you?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, well, you know, and I've been in this industry for a long time. I worked at an agency where some folks were court ordered to come see me and, or, you know, you have maybe a spouse that's being dragged in by their spouse that, you know, they're not really wanting to be there. And so it's kind of obvious when they don't really want to go deep, but most of the time they usually fall off and then they don't show up again.
That's always been something that I was intrigued with, was the people that were the court ordered people that said 5 weeks and I pulled the wool over their face the whole time, you know, and it's like, why would you do that? You know, why?
You're only cheating yourself. I know.
Yeah. Can you say to me, what would be your most significant contribution in this book? What can you feel is the diamond in this book? Why is this book different than other therapy books?
You know, I think the one thing I've heard and my intention even in writing the book is it's really accessible. I think that I think I'm able to explain concepts that could be really clinical or, you know, really heady, or esoteric. And I think I my hope was to make it to explain it in a way where people, anybody could pick it up and they could understand it.
In other words, you're the Stephen Gates, or what is the wheelchair guy?
Oh, Stephen Hawking. How,
yeah, you'd read one science book that was just translated. So wordy, and so you could barely get through it. You pick up one of his, and it would explain exactly what you read in the most simplified and human way. Oh, okay, now I get it.
Yes.
So I think what you're telling me is we get to meet you. We get to read you in this book in the most human possible way. And that's kind of cool.
Yeah. I like the way you said that. Yeah. I think that was kind of my goal. I didn't want it to be, again, I didn't want it to be over the top. I didn't want it to be clinical. In one of my reviews, that's what they said. It's very casual, very informal. And I wanted to be as real as possible, just authentic. Cause again, just, you know, I think that's relatable, you know.
Where do you think today's kids are going? I mean, I'm so confused. I'm confused by they've gone through hell.
Yeah,
with COVID.
Absolutely.
They've had to, a lot of them, not have normal graduations.
Terrible.
Or be credited for their achievements. And how do you think that's going to affect the kids of the future? I mean, do you feel that there's going to be a PTS of some sort in this generation?
You know, I think that's a good question. I think I definitely feel like that was a trauma for sure. But yet I do feel with all traumas, there's a silver lining. You know, I mean, from trauma comes resilience, and you know that you can get through things. I think that, you know, I mean, when COVID first happened, I remember a lot, you know, in talking to my clients, there was this fear response. And I remember saying, you know, as a people, we've been through stuff. You got to put in perspective. I mean, I'm not saying don't be afraid, but I'm just saying that we've been through World War II. We've had some really crazy things happen as a people. We'll get through this. But, you know, I think for a lot of our generations, like I didn't really experience much. I mean, we had 9/11 and that was terrible, but this was really hitting home and shutting everything down and just going through.
You weren't going to get out of it watching a movie of a building falling in some other city. It was going to be in your city, in your home.
It was here.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was that was closer to home. So I think absolutely it was traumatic, but I also think that there's this, oh God, we got through it. And, you know, let's learn that we can get through things. And so, and my hope was that there would be that resilience. I am seeing that with like a lot of clients. That's kind of the conversation that I like to have a lot. Like, look at, we're here and we didn't know we'd get here. And just to really highlight that, because some of them, I'd have so many clients that, oh my God, this is the end of the world. But I also think that for me at that time, that's the time to hopefully bring in your spirituality, you know, to go deeper. And I think the people that had the hardest time were ones that maybe they don't have that, or they don't know what happens when we die, or they haven't figured it out. Not that we,
a lot of suicide,
a lot of hopelessness came from it.
A lot of shootings. Do you think that the shootings that are happening now are, I keep feeling that we are all still in post-COVID trauma.
I think we're still coming out of it 100%. Yep.
I mean,
It's been surreal, the whole experience. It's almost like
Sense of fear, the sense of anger, the sense of
hopelessness.
Yeah. It just seems as if we are still
coming out of it.
We don't think that we're there.
Yeah.
But I think that I think it's going to take another couple of years.
Yeah, I think so too.
And I hope that the resilience of the kids that went through it will help us by being able to fix the ecosystem and being able to fix the adults' mistakes with passion. I hope that they will express their anger for COVID, not by guns or shooting or suicide, but by fixing up the terrible mess that the older generations have created.
Right. Yeah. Healing. Right. It's like
healing. Right.
learning and healing. I think that's the goal, you know? And I think, you know, for a lot of people, it was like one of two things happened during COVID. Either you really worked on yourself or you medicated, you know? And then for some people that may be medicated, they also came through it and then started to work on themselves. So, I mean, I always want to be positive and hopeful because I have seen a lot of shifts and changes that actually are positive, which is crazy.
Have you? Do you feel that way?
Yes, I do. I've seen.
And tell me about that. Tell me why you feel that way.
Just in my clients, you know, really breaking through addictions, really starting to develop daily practices. Like, I can't live like this anymore. This is a rock bottom. I can't live in fear anymore. I've got to do something different. And really wanting to make changes in their own lives. You know, that's what I've seen with not all my clients, but a lot of them. And then all of a sudden being fed up with fear, like, forget it. I can't be afraid anymore. I can't.
We'll be back with Amy C. Monday with part 3, Heal.
The Real Conscious Connection. Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
Humanity Healing International is a small nonprofit with a big dream. Since 2007, HHI has been working tirelessly to bring help to communities with little or no hope. Our projects are not broad mandates, nor are they overnight solutions, but they bring the reassurance that no one is alone and that someone cares. To learn more, please visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Grab a cup of tea or a glass of wine and tune in for Inspired Conversations with publisher Linda Joy on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Linda creates sacred space for leading female luminaries, empowering authors, heart-centered female entrepreneurs, coaches, and healers. A soulful venue where guests openly share the fears and obstacles they've overcome, wisdom and lessons learned, and the personal journey that led them to the transformational work they do in the world. Inspired Conversations to empower you on your path to authentic, soulful living.
If I could be you,
and you could be me, for just 1 hour.
If you could find a way
to get inside
each other's mind.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out, and for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
I think fear of death is sometimes
a big deal.
And COVID was kind of like that. So yeah. I think it brought us all there, where we feared an ugly death, yeah. or it was the fight of, hell no, I won't wear a mask, and yes, I'm going to wear a mask everywhere, and right. And it began to be satirical against fear and yeah. So I really hope that you will be able to take this book and heal us all, Amy. And where can we reach you again? Tell me your information.
Yeah, let's see. Well, you can reach me at the website for the book, as well as, you know, if you wanted to contact me, that would be howtotheheal.net.
Howtoheal.net.
Super easy.
And okay. And do you do Zoom therapy sessions?
You know, I do. I do Zoom, and I do in person. I have actually some people that actually do telephone call. Although right now, like I told you, my practice is like overly full,
overloaded
with a wait list. So that
do you have? Do you have a secretary?
I don't. I need one. Yeah, I do. My name is Amy.
How you do it then? Because I think you have to be. You need your sister.
I know. At some point,
you need her that mindset to be a creative,
yes,
a creative therapist with a free spirit,
right? The right brain
to be scheduling and being on time and having those are hard things, even for me.
Yes.
And I just, you know, I have to explain that to people sometimes,
right?
You know, so. I admire you for keeping it all together, girl.
Thanks. One day at a time. It's such an honor. I mean, I love doing the work when I'm helping people. I'm bathed in that. I mean, if anybody's healing, I'm bathed in that light and goodness because the healing happens beyond me. So it's really cool to be witness to it.
Awesome. Yeah. All right, Amy. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
To thank Amy C. Monday, I really enjoyed the family dynamics that she spoke on how she grew up on the last part of this show. I'm all about family and how much influence who our brothers, sisters, or parents can make on our lives and our patterns in the future. And boy, Amy is somebody you just need to make an appointment with, although she says she is full. And I can see why. I wanted to add something to the times that we are in. As Amy and I spoke on fear, I believe that we are still in post-pandemic weapons of accusation and blame on each other, and more shootings, more angry people, just hostility wherever you go. And as Amy and I spoke on, it seems to be a side effect that we're still bringing from being trapped in our houses during the pandemic. I wanted to add something here from Human Window, and it's how to deal with fear of the future. Great advice from 12 experts. We can all experience fear of the future from time to time, but what about when this fear starts to run out of control and dominate our thinking in an unhelpful way? In this case, they asked a group of selected experts to give them their best advice when it comes to dealing with fear of the future. And here's what they said. Our brain is designed to keep us safe, to constantly scan the environment for any dangers and respond to those dangers in order to survive. When we are faced with the unknown, and particularly when we are faced with stresses like the future, we can shift into a state of hyperarousal, a fear state which can build up if we aren't able to recognize what's happening. And I think right now, most of us feel like the world is racing ahead of us in every possible way. And we're trying to grab onto the reins, but it just seems to be going crazy. Social media creating fearful situations, people shooting each other, prejudice. It's just crazy. So to combat this anxiety, we can ask ourselves, is this worry really helping right now? What exactly am I worried about? And is there a solution now in this moment? Self-talk is a great tool for managing fear of the future. And as Amy said in our show today, the messages that you tell yourself are very important. You know, sending them into a higher level changes so much. Reminding yourself that even if you don't know what the future holds, you do know. So when you clarify for yourself what that fear is, ask, what would I need to be safe and free from fear in the future? What are the barriers to that sense of freedom? It's a much better use of your energy to focus on a solution to what might be frightening rather than spending that energy on what catastrophe is going to lie ahead. Remind yourself that you are safe. We fear the future because it is uncertain, and our brain likes something to hold on to. It wants to feel safe and therefore tries to be able to control and predict what will happen. Without that predictability, our brain, in an attempt to maintain our survival, looks for anything and everything that could go wrong. And oh my gosh, all you have to do is open up your phone or your laptop and it's all there for you. Anxious thoughts start with what if followed by a catastrophe. And if you can't think of the catastrophe, boy, oh boy, that catastrophe is right on the internet for you. That said, we need to learn to override our worried mind, because nothing about the future is really certain. There are no guarantees, and we need to learn to adopt a flexible mindset and adapt to change. Remind yourself that you are safe. You can use a mantra, or as Amy said today on our show, make some tea, have a hot bath, take a walk, a statement that you repeat again and again, or an action that you do in a pattern to calm your brain. For instance, you might say, "I am safe," repeatedly until you calm down. If you are catastrophizing about all the things that you see on the internet that might go wrong, consider the possibility that the opposite might happen as well. This is Anne-Marie signing out on The Calling of Life on Om Times Radio.